I am Gordon Evans, and I am joined by Yvonne Zipp, reporter for MLive and the Kalamazoo Gazette, and we will be speaking today with Western Michigan University President John Dunn. Thank you for being here, sir.
Gordon, thank you very much. It's always nice to be with you, and also Yvonne, nice to be here and have an opportunity to chat for a while.
All right. Yvonne, first question.
Sure. President Dunn, I was wondering if you'd had a chance to see the Code Red series that MLive has been running over the past week regarding lockdown drills and disaster drills in schools and universities?
In answer to your question, I have seen it. I haven't studied it, but yes.
Okay. I was wondering, the WMU was conducting 8 fire drills and 2 tornado drills in dorms, but then it was a 1-to-1 ratio in the administration buildings. In the series, the fire marshal was saying that that was not compliant with the law. WMU is not the only university in Michigan who is interpreting that law differently, but was wondering what your thoughts were about that and whether WMU planned to implement any changes to drilling in the admin buildings.
Well, of course, as a university, we always comply with the law, and any time that someone suggests that we're not, we need to review that, and obviously we are. But let me say it to you this way. You know, my career, I've been at the University of Connecticut, Oregon State University, University of Utah, Southern Illinois University, Carbondale. This is the only university that I can recall doing and taking seriously drills. I think it's a tribute to the state of Michigan. The question might be, how many do we need to do? But I think we do take it seriously here, and I'm quite proud of what we do.
There are drills, I know, for tornadoes. Now, what about a drill for, say, someone with a gun? That has happened on some college campuses.
We have done those drills. We have mock efforts where we bring together the leadership of the university, go through a simulation, a vignette, and play it out pretty carefully. So, yeah, I'm quite pleased with the things that we are doing. Can we do more? Can we do it better? Yes. You also have to be a little bit careful about doing it too often, because there is a tendency for people to take it not as seriously as they ought to. And, you know, it is important, and we will continue to meet our expectations, the expectations and safety of our students and faculty and staff.
When you say do it too often, you're concerned that if you're doing this on a regular basis in some way, that people just start to think it's another drill and they're not preparing actually for what would happen in a real event?
Yeah, it's. I grew up in a very, very small town, a community that was sort of infamous for the number of tornadoes. And so tornado drills were not uncommon. But unfortunately, those can become the drill so common that people are not as attentive and they don't take it as seriously as they ought to. And so I think frequency is a question, and we need to make sure that we do it right. And I think we're doing much that is right. Can we do more? Can we do it better? Absolutely.
I have a specific question on tornado drills, because this is a tornado shelter that we're in here at WMUK. Most of the drills that have been done recently have been done at times when there aren't as many students here. So I guess I'm wondering, does that give you a real good simulation of how to prepare for a tornado? If say, it happened during the regular part of the school year, say, in September or something, when we would have a large student body?
Yeah, Gordon, your observation is good, but I'm not as familiar with the accuracy of the statement, so I'd have to go back and check to see how many we've done with students, without students. I do know this, that we've had occasionally a need to evacuate one of the residential buildings. I can think of this very definitely in Henry Hall not too long ago. I was extremely impressed with the responsiveness of both the fire and the police, and of course they're the same, but it was fast, and we had people out of there quickly, and it was cold, and we knew where to go with them and what to do. And so, you know, I think, again, there are things that people here are doing that are very appropriate. And again, wherever we can make improvements, we will.
Yvonne?
Great. I wanted to ask, the College of Aviation is having to grapple with a unexpected turn of events, and that the FAA announced on Friday that the W.K. Kellogg Air Traffic Control Tower was going to be one of the ones defunded. How is the university coming along with its plans, and how disruptive is this closure going to be for the College of Aviation?
It's a very good question, very timely. This morning I met with the Aviation Advisory Board, great representatives from the industry, people who are vested in aviation industry, which is a huge industry, by the way, in the state of Michigan. We will be okay. We have contingency plans, but we also have not given up on sort of the quest of why was the decision made as it was made, and what did we miss or did the federal government miss with respect to reviewing our request that this tower should be open and sustained as such. Given the level of activity here, it would seem to me that there may be an opportunity to revisit this question, and we're going to try and push on that as best we can.
Was that sort of a joint effort, you know, you, Air National Guard? I mean, there's a lot of different things going on there. Were there several of you involved in trying to persuade the federal government to leave this one intact?
Yeah, well, our dean of aviation, Captain Powell, working with Battle Creek, the request had to come from the community of Battle Creek, but certainly there's great support there. The leadership of Battle Creek is very good, and, you know, I think they, too, are quite disappointed with the outcome. But again, you know, we've had situations where the first outcome is not the desired outcome, and there are opportunities to address that and try to be persuasive in further conversations.
If efforts at persuasion fall short and this goes on for a while, will people still get the proper training?
Yes, we have contingency plans, and we will be fine. And we have by far one of the top aviation programs in the country, number three, no less, on anyone's list. And we will continue to have an outstanding aviation program, and it will be in Battle Creek.
I want to ask you, we're in the midst of a great time for sports fans in this country. We're in the postseason basketball and all sorts of other things going on. Since you were last here, you presented part of a study at a conference on education and athletics back in January, finding that spending has just exploded on college sports, especially amongst the major conferences. As you took a look at that, is it your feeling that we're misappropriating resources at many of these colleges and universities?
Well, actually, the paper that I presented and the question that I was asked to address was to look at programs that are moderately resourced in comparison to those that are highly resourced. For instance, if you were to take the Big Ten, at the lowest end would be $50 million expenditure on athletics. That would be Northwestern, and the highest would be Ohio State at $135 million. If you go to the Big 12, you'll find Iowa State, Texas Tech at about $50 million, and University of Texas at $150 million.
So how do MAC schools compare to that?
And the point I was trying to make is that what would be viewed as moderately resourced programs, the MAC, the bandwidth would be from a low of $19 million to a high of about $25 million. And what I was trying to point out is with pride that the Mid-American Conference may be one of the few conferences that has been able to maintain itself geographically located, but also long-standing and a strong history, but also a conference that believes it's about competition among equals. And we don't have schools trying to outspend other schools. If you go to the Big Ten and you've got Northwestern at $50 million and Ohio State at $135 million. I mean, that's a huge gap. And I also pointed out that of the remaining clean programs, the programs that have never had a Major One violation since the NCAA has started recording that would go back into the 80s, the early 80s, I think it's 83, there's only now 16 schools that have, five of those are in the Mid-American Conference. And we're quite proud of that. I think it's about competing fairly, equitably, on the field, on the court, whatever the venue might be. And, you know, it's about good coaches and having good coaches, recruiting athletes, and doing the right kind of thing. So my point was that if people are going to talk about moderately resourced and to want to divide this by conferences, that's not the way to go, because there are conferences that have very lower resource competing with very schools that are much higher resourced. And I think that leads to some things that people ought to be looking at and thinking about and be concerned about.
Well, Western Michigan does compete with some of those schools that are in the larger conferences, you know, Big Ten schools in football and sometimes in basketball. How much do you worry about competitive balance in those situations where you're playing out of conference? You still want to be competitive. Can you continue to do it if the spending gap continues to grow?
Well, you know, we beat Iowa, we beat Illinois not too long ago. I think the return on the investment there is pretty good. And I, you know, as a president, I smile. I say, you know, what those other folks spent and what we're spending and the successes that we do have, I think are quite commendable.
One of the things in this Delta Cost Project report on spending in athletics, they find that schools really do not necessarily get the return on investment that they think they're going to get from a winning sports programming sports program, regardless of the sport. You know, as a college president, do you see some things that are tough to maybe quantify in the balance sheet that is a benefit to Western Michigan University, say, from being in the NCAA hockey tournament a couple years in a row, those sort of things?
Yeah, I think, you know, this the way you phrased that and the context is a conversation, a discussion, an argument that's been going on for a long, long time. Certainly, alumni and friends of the university do note those things. They get excited about it. I think that for presidents, though, we need to be really careful as we look at this as we move forward. Do we still have the same level of interest from our student populations as we once had? That is a concern, and I don't want to suggest otherwise. When Duke University has trouble getting students there to go to their basketball games, we ought to all take note, okay? That's cause for concern, right? So are we losing that as we move forward in terms of the interest in our younger populations? But on the other hand, I think athletics does provide you an opportunity to get some visibility. There's some marketing benefit and value there, both directions. When you run a clean program and when you're being honored for having a clean program, that's good stuff. If you have people that do things that are unfortunate and inappropriate, Miami is an example, has been all over the media, and most of that not good. I'm talking now Miami in Florida, not Miami of Ohio. And, you know, I think that's a concern.
But does the alumni and the people who, say, might be contributors, do they react the same way to running a clean program as they do to running one that wins conference championships and those sort of things?
They listen to this president, they do, because I'm very, very favorable and very kind and very positive about talking about not only – I don't even use the term student-athlete. I talk about scholar-athletes. The academic performance of our students who are athletes is really very, very impressive. As a matter of fact, their GPA is actually even better in season than it is out of season. Okay, it's about discipline. It's about having good mentorship, guidance, direction. And it all counts. It adds up.
Yvonne?
Great. I had a different funding question for you. The Center on Budget and Policy Priorities recently released figures on the percent change in per-student funding by states between 2008 and 2013. And during those years, Michigan cut 32.4% of its funding to public universities, which was tied for 12th with Mississippi. And at the same time, public universities obviously were raising tuition. Michigan only raised tuition 19.5%, which was below the national average of 27%, and obviously below about the third that got cut. But as a result, students are having to shoulder more of this cost. And I'm sort of wondering, how long is this state of affairs sustainable?
Well, you know, our commitment to our students, to our families, to the public as a whole is to do everything we can to make sure that we sustain quality programs and, of course, affordability is critical. It is unfortunate that Michigan has taken the position that it has through, I might add, a couple governors. In which we have not been able to receive, I think, the support that we should. those who are more senior in our community that went to Western Michigan University in 1980, if they graduated around that time, for every dollar that we expended in support of the university, 80 cents came from the state. 20 cents came from tuition and families and the student. That changed about 1995. It went 55-45, and today it's 23% essentially from the state, and the university generates the other 77. Another way to say that, if you were running a corporation, and we're not a corporation, we're an educational institution, a university, but we've been able to recreate and redefine ourselves quite successfully, some of that on the back of families and others, but not totally. We have, of the research universities, the fifth lowest administrative cost of all of the research universities. That's also been documented in a study. Surprised us. We knew we were low. We didn't know we were that low. So, you know, we're trying to do the right thing in trying to find a balance to provide opportunities for young people and some seniors who are also in our university, at the same time trying to keep our cost contained.
That gap, though, that Yvonne mentioned there, that between what's been cut at the state and then the rise in tuition, there's a gap there. It hasn't all been filled in. So is there something that's getting lost in there? You've talked many times about wanting to make sure that this time for these students is as fulfilling as it can be. Are there some things being lost in their college experience because you've not made it all up, made up all that funding through tuition increases?
Well, I think one thing we do know, that students are working and working in many cases more than one job, two, sometimes three. I worry about that from the standpoint of the richness of the educational experience, not only what happens in the classroom, but access to the other many great things that occur on the campus, theater, performance, poetry reading, being able to go to a play, a musical, to really enjoy the fullness and the vastness and the richness of the university. It's pretty tough to do that if you're working one, two, or three jobs and working the number of hours that some of our young people are. You know, when they get up to 30 hours and 30 to 40 hours a week plus going to school, boy, that's a tough, tough goal. So I worry about that, yeah, and I think there's some loss there. I think we've done very well in terms of support for students with respect to mentors, but people have really had to roll up their sleeves and go to work and dig deeper. I think we're doing fine there. Can we sustain that? You know, the question is how long can you sustain that, because we're really asking a lot of our employee base to be able to do that.
Student aid. There's also been a lot of talk about universities in Michigan are drawing back on that. You have always made a point of saying when tuition goes up, you're also going to find some additional money for student aid. Is that sustainable for much longer?
Well, I think it has to be, because that's really part of the balance that we're trying to achieve here. We've just gone through a study of our financial aid and our packaging. Really, the question here is, are we really doing that in the most efficient and the most effective way? And so I think there's some things that we're learning as we look at that. We run different scenarios with data sets. We're pretty sophisticated in the work that we're doing there. We have some outside help with that. But there's nothing more the dark days for a president of the university is when you have an outstanding student who's making good progress and they're $1,000 short or $2,000 short. There's only so many times you can fill that hole. And that's why I ask, and pardon me for doing this, but with our listeners and others, people would be shocked at how much a $100 contribution can make a difference in whether a student can sustain himself or herself in a university setting. It's important.
Listeners to this radio station might have heard a while back an interview with a correspondent for Bridge Magazine, Ron French, on a story he did about out-of-state students. One of the interesting things he found in his analysis is that amongst the schools that are drawing more than 20% of their students from out-of-state would be Michigan and Michigan State, which is not a big surprise, Michigan Tech, which has a bit of a specialty as an engineering school, and Northern Michigan University, which has kind of boosted its marketing to out-of-state students. When you're looking at the bottom line, do you consider the possibility that if you found some more students who were willing to pay out-of-state tuition and come to Western Michigan University, that can help a little bit on the budget side and make it a little more affordable for everyone?
Well, yeah, absolutely. I did listen to your report on that and your interview with Mr. French. Western Michigan University, of course, has 1,700 students from various parts of the world that come here, international students. Their rate is different, tuition rate, than others, both undergraduate and graduate. And then we have a pretty large number of students that come from Illinois in particular, Ohio, Indiana a little bit less so, a little bit from Wisconsin. And then we have other states, and I think we have every state represented in some variation on the university campus. Those students are attracted here because of the quality of the programs that we offer, and they're attracted here to some extent regardless of what is the tuition level, because they know that there's something here that they can obtain that is highly desirable. At the same time, as a university, we're quite friendly to out-of-state students in the sense that they can become in-state without a great deal, a high hurdle to go over. And, our goal is to help young people. And we join with the governor. The governor says, recruit people from other states, get them here. They'll see how great this place is, and certainly Southwest Michigan and the region that we have here. And they'll want to stay here if we can find opportunities and jobs for them. And so it works quite nicely. All of us can look in our own communities and our own neighborhoods, the number of students that came to us from some other place outside of Michigan and said, wow, I'm not leaving. This is a great place to live. And it is a great place to live, and I could say that with some validity, given that I've lived other places.
Yeah, right. I'm wondering, do you feel that there is a threshold, though, of in-state students that you want to keep because it is, after all, a state university?
Well, the threshold there always in any wise university, and I think I speak for most presidents who have been down this path, you never want to exclude an in-state student from the opportunity at your university and to trade that seat out for an out-of-state student. And we're not doing that. We're not close to that, nor should we be. Oregon, many years ago, when I was at Oregon State University, there was the state legislator said they had a different funding formula, but any money that you took from an out-of-state student you could keep, but you wouldn't get any state support for that student. You know, there are different models. But the goal here is really to be first and foremost the Michigan resident. We've never lost sight of that. But we have room in selected programs for students other than Michigan, and they're welcome here. By the way, the value of that to the Michigander is significant. When you have students from other states, I mean, students know, and if they come to Western Michigan University, they know they can compete not only with the students in Mattawan, okay, or the students at Oregon State or at Western Michigan, excuse me, but they know they can compete with anybody in the world, anywhere, because they've had classes with those students, okay? Or if they can't compete, they know they got to pick it up, right? And so that's good because it helps to validate who they are and what they have to offer.
Yvonne?
Sure. Speaking of, you were mentioning students finding jobs in Southwest Michigan. Nationwide, we've got unemployment now at a 5-year low, graduation's coming up. Are you all finding that this year's batch is having an easier time getting jobs?
Yeah, we're very, very pleased with that. Our sophistication in our career placement and planning now, being able to attract alumni, is getting better each and every year, both from the standpoint of knowing what their newest address is, but also having them respond to inquiries, okay? And the data there are quite encouraging and improving each year. This morning I met with the Aviation Advisory Board, as I said earlier, and, that industry is changing dramatically in terms of what's happening there. There's a lot of interesting discussions going on. I'm a member of the Talent 2025 where we're trying to look to make sure that we're lined up with what industry and the corporate world needs, whether it be in manufacturing or frontline office people or engineers or what it is. At the same time, the industries are doing, I think, a much better job of assessing themselves what they need. you know, this talent match is dependent upon us producing the right people to match up, but also that the industry has a good feel for what their pipeline looks like and what their needs are. And it has to go and work in all directions to be successful.
There's a lot of change going on, as you mentioned, in aviation, but a lot of industries. You know, is it possible to get a good grasp of someone who's entering college at 18, what they're going to need when they're 22 or 23? And I guess is there also maybe just sort of a baseline of learning that you try to give them so that they are able to set themselves up as lifelong learners, that sort of thing?
Yeah, the great question. You know, one of the nice things that we offer at Western Michigan University is of the 15 public universities, our offerings for undergraduate students is vast, okay? I believe it's as large, if not larger, than anyone else in the state system. What that means then is that we know that many young people come to us into the university not necessarily certain of what they're going to major in, study, or what they're going to do with their career. So by having opportunities and a variety of programs that they can study, the breadth that we offer, and then creating for them internships and externships so that they can try some of those things out, that's the path we're on, and we're really working hard to make sure that students have those experiences so that they know and they have a better feeling of what this particular profession, experience, or whatever might be. And I think it helps, and it helps in many, many directions. And, you know, our corporate partners in the industry and others, they like it, the businesses, because now they get a chance to see someone early, get an experience with that person, try to hang on to them for the future. And that, I think that's as it should be.
Does that also fit in somewhat with a lot of the partnerships you've set up with community colleges? Because community colleges are often seen as a little more able to respond quickly to the needs of businesses. And do you think that your partnerships with community colleges kind of feed into that whole idea of preparing people to get into the workforce, that sort of thing?
Yeah, I'm really proud of our relationships with the community colleges. You know, we all know Kalamazoo Valley Community College, and it's a great institution, but there's Kellogg Community College, Southwest Michigan. Then there's we work closely with Grand Rapids Community College. We've been over Detroit with Wayne County Community College, a huge community college. It's all about the young people that we're trying to help and serve. And so it's not about the institutions. It's about keeping our eye on those that we're trying to help and sustain in education. Community colleges do, I think, respond well. I think they have necessary flexibility. But, you know, the universities in this state are also very, very fortunate. And we're fortunate because, in my case, I have 8 trustees, and they're really outstanding trustees. And we want to make a decision, and we want to move. We can move. We don't have some higher governing structure board where a good idea is buried and lost forever. Even if it comes back, we may not recognize it. Okay, this is my experience in the state of Illinois with the Illinois Board of Higher Education.
You're back here now to the state university system, which many times on our airwaves you have said it would be a really bad idea for Michigan.
I think the folks who put together our Constitution and thought about this were very, very wise. And we maximize the best of our relationships without creating costly, unnecessary oversight that adds no value. And I feel strongly about that, and I can cite many examples, whether it's Wisconsin or Illinois. So we've got it right here, but it does allow us to be able to move and to do so quickly, and I'm happy about that.
John Dunn, thank you for your time. Yvonne Zipp, thank you for coming in as well.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, Yvonne, thank you. And Gordon, thanks for your time. It's nice to chat with you, and we look forward to doing so again in the future.